My foster parents didn't just teach me to fish. They taught me that persistence and patience pay off. They didn't just teach me to bake the perfect birthday cake. They also taught me to measure and meet my own potential. They didn't just teach me to garden. They taught me to plant seeds and watch them grow. And they didn't just teach me to walk. They taught me to stand on my own 2 feet. Foster a child and change their future. Visit youthvillages.org/foster.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Hey, this is Friends from Work Plus. Welcome back. And welcome back to the riveting conclusion of one of the best seasons of television that Marvel has ever created, and that is part 3 of Daredevil season 3. Robbie, how are you doing on this lovely Sunday afternoon? And yes, I know I'm dating the episode.
It could be any, you know, any given Sunday, right? Isn't that what they say?
Yeah. Well, in the NFL, yes.
Yeah.
On this podcast, no.
this will actually date the episode then, because I finished Daredevil season 3 the same morning that I finished our screeners for the first parts of Echo.
Yep.
So I'm doing great. I'm very much like in a very specific Marvel headspace, which I kind of love. Yep. And I love that there is about to be a Disney Plus MCU show that I can say fits within the same universe and framework as Daredevil season 3, which really has never happened before. I don't think you can point to any other project, even aside from the fact that it actually features characters from Daredevil, but I don't think you can point to any other project that fits tonally the way that does. And so it was kind of this, like, I feel like in the past, whenever I've watched Daredevil, even when we've rewatched here after knowing that he was in the MCU via No Way Home, it still always felt a little bit like, oh man, like that was so good. Like I kind of missed this era. I wish that we were getting things like this on some level. And it feels really nice to be wrapping this journey as we're kind of beginning it again, so to speak. So I'm in a great mood.
As it's born again.
Wow.
As we mentioned on the main feed episode, and I don't exactly know when you are going to be hearing this episode, but Robbie's correct. We're doing something different with Echo. Robbie and I have screeners for 3 of the 5 episodes, but because we want to give this show a little more of its due, we are going to be doing on the main feed Echo episode 1 and 2 without having seen 3, 4, or 5. So I intentionally told Robbie, do not watch the 3rd episode. So what's going to happen, though, is all of the listeners out there are probably going to leapfrog us for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So while you and I are having genuine conversations about just episodes 1 and 2, then 3 and 4. We will probably be ignoring messages on social media and Discord because we don't want things spoiled from you all. But in the past, I have found that it's just more fun for us to not get way ahead and then lose track of what episode is what when we're talking about it. Like it's better mm-hmm. for us to just be talking about the first 2 without having seen the 3rd one. So having seen two episodes of Echo, and again, you maybe have seen them all by now, yes, we can 100% confirm that this is the version of Wilson Fisk and Matthew Murdock that is in the MCU now, not only from the promos, but it is the same character. So you are right. Mm-hmm. It's a first here on this podcast. We've never had that happen. Who knows if something like that will happen for something like Punisher or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because I've now heard that there's rumors that Punisher is actually in Daredevil Born Again. And so Who knows if they'll retroactively do that. I don't know where that stops, but it is a first here on the podcast for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I love that too, because this chunk of episodes, I'm trying to think what the analog is for other characters within the MCU. There are certainly moments like that with Spider-Man that we've talked about. But for Daredevil, these four episodes are about as perfect of like a representation of a comic book character as I think you can imagine. Like, I think that this is, for me, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, I just think in terms of respecting the source material, creating a new riveting narrative, the performances, the execution from like the Pisano score to the directing.
Camera work.
I feel like, yeah, it's up there to me with the best like iterations of comic book characters that we talk about when we talk about like the first Iron Man film or The Dark Knight. Like these moments that are like, yeah, that it's really hard to beat that. Yep. That's like about as great of an imagining of this as there could be.
So we've been separating our rankings of the films and the shows, but I agree with everything you're saying. Daredevil season 3 is a tier 1 show. It'd be WandaVision, Daredevil, and Loki season 2 in that top tier for me. Those three clearly set themselves apart, in my opinion, from the other iterations. And yeah, we've never combined them all, but if you did, it would still be a tier 1 project, in my opinion. In general, I want to get right into it. Excuse my voice there. I want to get right into it just because my one weird take with this batch of episodes is that I think episode 10 is my least favorite episode of the season. So in one batch of four episodes, I agree that three of the four are perfect, with 10 being my least favorite one, and then 13 maybe being my favorite one. I'm talking about two ends of the spectrum here in one podcast episode. But, you know, I think just with episode 10, and I remember from my original notes, I just remember thinking, this is the one time in the entire season, literally the only time the whole season, where I thought, do I need this? I remember calling you, like, do I need this from Karen? Do I need to find out that she's like stripping and doing drugs in the past and has like such a haunted past? And that's not even disputing maybe the take it is from the comics, like you said. It could be a perfect iteration of a comic take. I just, as a viewer, remember thinking, why do we have to take this far of a sidestep from the main plot, do a flashback episode to a depressing as all get out story that I just don't even know. And I could hear some arguments for sure, but I just don't know that it informs the character that much as far as the current iteration of the character, at least to the degree that I need it right there, basically. And I get that it's tying in that, you know, like Matt's, like everyone's abandoned Matt. And so like learning a little more about Karen and how she then chooses to not abandon Matt is a pivotal thing. I get that. Do you feel any of that weird tension from episode 10? And again, this is coming from someone who thinks this is a tier one show and I'm about to rave about the last three episodes in their perfection. But do you feel that in 10 at all? Like when you get there?
I do. I mean, so, you know, it's the first in this batch and it had been a while since I watched episode 9. I forgot what I was, again, like I've said before, this may be my first time rewatching this season ever. I think I may have only seen it when it initially aired. So I didn't remember really any of the ways things would play out. So whenever I got to this episode 10, I wasn't sure like at what point it was going to bring us back to the present. But I mean, I hear you. I think that I liked the performance that she gave here a lot. And it's sort of,
I agree that there's no acting concerns, by the way, at all.
Yeah. Well, which, and I point that out because there were acting concerns for me with her performance, in season one, whenever we were first supposed to be getting introduced to Karen, it felt like she was just kind of the person that everything happened to and that Matt was kind of just like motivated by and trying to protect. And like, she was just in this constant state of trauma.
Right. And yeah, correct.
You know, then in season two, as she moves into like, now she's an investigative journalist, that never felt quite like earned to me, because it was just kind of like, well, now you realize that you couldn't continue with the character in the state she was initially introduced. And so we're going to now kind of go to the opposite end of the spectrum and make her like a prime mover and like a protagonist almost on the level of Matt. And that, I think, was the right move ultimately. But again, I just don't think that the bridge was really there for me to care enough for it to be believable. But I really like that this episode shows us, one, it just gives us the chance to kind of showcase that character and make us care more about her, period. But I also like that we learn that Karen, even though she does have this darker past, we also saw that she was the one that kind of felt the responsibility of running the diner, and that like that's what drove her to then like also act so irresponsibly, is it was like that was the only way that she could vent or like the only way that she felt she could cope with the state of things. And I say that because it actually does, I think, retroactively enhance the character from the beginning, because we kind of start to understand like how scarred she is, but also why she shows up at Nelson and Murdoch and feels this sense of responsibility and ownership over the whole enterprise. So I'm with you in that if I were to strike any episode or any chunk of an episode, I think that this is one you could strike. But I think that given how much they foreshadowed this reveal, like throughout the whole series with Karen and kind of talking about the things she was running from, I also feel like if we didn't get at least some level of flashback here, it would have kind of been a dangling thread that was out there.
I think that's all fair. Going way back to your first point about the acting, just like WandaVision, or at least what I always say with WandaVision, there's no side actor concerns either. Like, I feel like her dad, her brother, her boyfriend are all doing a pretty good job.
I agree.
I think I agree with everything you're saying. I just feel emotionally like it kind of grinds to a halt for me a little bit. But the back half of this episode, oh my gosh, they kill Father Lantom. And that was such a crazy twist for me, because, you know, that obviously being Matt's moral center, you know, and to take mm-hmm. that away from him, I just remember in the moment, my note says, no, 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 not the father. And that's how I felt. And I guess it's effective in that way, you know. I'm ready to talk about episode 11 though, because just in general, it's just not my favorite one. Like when they come back from the flashback, I don't love all the working through stuff in the basement between Matt and Karen either. Again, there's nothing wrong with it. I just feel like I've been grinded to a halt emotionally. And I'm like ready to pick back up. So that's all.
Before we do go to 11, I think this is something that we maybe foreshadowed ourselves in the last episode. I know that we've tried to be, or I've tried to be somewhat spoiler free on these in case people are watching for the first time, which, you know, now is a great time to do that. One thing that the MCU has historically done really well is take these disparate bits of a character's history or mythology and combine them in a new way that is both surprising to comics readers and gripping to non-comics readers, but also still faithful to the spirit of the thing, if not to the form of it. this finale is kind of combining bits of the original Frank Miller Born Again story that, you know, I'm sure is going to be further adapted in the actual Born Again series, I would assume. But a lot of season three was mapping that as well. And so it's combining that where you kind of have Matt in that story, like Fisk, like here, essentially finds out who Matt is because Karen gives away his identity. In the comic, it's a lot darker because she basically sells his identity for drugs. And so I think what this show is trying to do is show that, like, it is, like, this is a character that has made mistakes like that, driven by, like, substance abuse and has gotten really low. And so in that way, they're kind of shouting out to the comic's inspiration. But then they're leaping forward to a story that is much more controversial and more recent, which is the Guardian Devil story that came out from Kevin Smith and Joe Quesada, I think in 99 or so, late 90s. But in that story, that's where Karen Page ultimately dies in the comics. And she is killed by Bullseye in the church in the exact way that the father is killed here. And so they're kind of giving you that bait and switch where if you're a comics reader and you know that that's what's coming, or if you're not and you just know that it's clearly,
ugh,
it seems to be culminating in a Karen death.
That's the Marvel Studios special right there.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so then it's like it's both surprising, but then it's also like such a different gut punch because you're not expecting it to be the father, and it's this priest that, and this is kind of my final thought on this episode, that has been with us in this series from episode one.
Correct.
And that is one of my, like, that's one of my big complaints from season one still is I think that they...
Ben?
Like, I always hated how quickly we got rid of Ben Urich. And again, that was a really well-executed moment, but I just found myself thinking here, man, I love... Like, I thought Agent Adim was such a great add this season. There were several other characters and features that came to the forefront this season for the first time that I loved. But I really appreciate that the priest was not one of those. That, like, this moment felt so earned to me because this character, it's not like they at the last minute were like, oh, we need to introduce a character and give him enough screen time to make the death count. It was like, yeah, this is the patient, just like us sticking with this all the way through. And you're right. It is the moral center of Matt. And at a time and in a season where the whole question is, can Matt maintain that moral center, to then see that executed in that, to see the moral center taken from him, literally. It's so like that I thought was really, really powerfully done. And then, you know, in addition to all the kind of comics payoff in that. So I agree with you that I think from here it only goes up, but I wanted to note that facet of episode 10 that I thought was really impressive.
Totally. And I'll just add a pretty cool fight sequence in the church itself, actually.
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of the Ben Affleck movie, because I feel like that,
yeah, that church,
the final sequence is like him and Bullseye.
A little bit of an improvement here, I think. Now we get into three of the coolest episodes of television, just straight up. Episode 11, my first note at this point was, Nadim, grow a pair, please. And I think that's because I'm just getting so sick of him getting pushed around. You know, this episode starts with him chauffeuring Daredevil everywhere, and he's unwilling to speak up, and he doesn't know.
Not my Daredevil.
He doesn't know how to make the right move. But it's just there's so much perfect execution. While he's doing that, Matt and Karen are still trapped inside the basement. Matt's mother's trying to cover for him. The big twist here is Vanessa is finally back in the show. She's coming back into Fisk's life. Fisk is trying to shake down that old lady for the painting, which, can I start there really quick and then pass it off to you just real fast?
Yeah.
I think that's one of my favorite parts of the show. And that's so strange to say, because Fisk has always murdered everybody with no care, no sympathy to any situation. Like, it doesn't matter how desperate the situation is, he'll kill the person immediately. And I find it so striking that he sits down with this Holocaust survivor, basically, and the lady stands up to him, like, says things that normally would get her murdered. And because of Vanessa, he walks out of there and decides it's the best call to not have the painting, because that's what Vanessa would have wanted. Your family has suffered enough. That was crazy to me. And I loved it. I love getting just a pinch of a different Fisk for a second. And then, obviously, the way it sets up for the future with what Poindexter then does and how that actually pisses Fisk off after he made his decision, even though he's trying to please him. That's a weird bit to start on, but I love that part of this episode. Give me your thoughts on episode 11. Sorry.
No, I love that. And also, she looks really good for being a kid in 1943, I've got to say.
I can't remember off the top of my mind. Is she talking about her parents or she was a survivor? She was a survivor?
I think she was a survivor, which, you know, I guess checks out. When this show premiered, she would have been like,
almost 65, 70. Well, if she's like maybe seven at that time, maybe. Yeah.
She says toddler. So I think that they're giving
So three.
The idea is like she's supposed to barely remember it, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway. But no, I agree. That was such a great, almost a callback to that Vanyarik scene in terms of them sitting across from each other in a living room and this underlying tension, in part because of that scene where you're like, I really think anything could happen here. Like, you wouldn't be surprised if Fisk does just kill her. But then also you see that he respects her as they're having the conversation. And I think it's an interesting moment for the character, because so much of what seems to motivate him is this sense that he is actually kind of like everything that he does, however evil it is motivated by his sense that he, like, that the city kind of needs him, you know. And even if that's self-delusion, which he talks about later in this episode chunk, I guess in the finale, with Vanessa, maybe the next to last episode. Anyway, like, maybe it's that, but I think here it's kind of laid bare to him, like, if he does take that painting from her, which he can only do now with violence because she's not allowing him to use his influence and power, then that's the kind of thing that he can't really rationalize as like part of his quest and part of his like appointed role as the leader and savior of the city. And so I feel like even saying Vanessa would want this to remain with you is kind of like I think Vanessa at this point in the show, at least, is still kind of like his stand-in for like
his moral compass of sorts, a tiny, tiny bit, a tiny bit.
Yeah, like the angel on his shoulder, you know? Yeah,
at this moment, and then, but just wait.
Exactly. Because but I think even whenever she first arrives, which I think is this episode, maybe the next one, I'm losing track, but it's the same, like, he is wanting her to be that. And so he's trying to box her off from everything that he does, because I think he doesn't want to taint that. And even the conversation that I just referenced that he has with her when he's talking about like whether or not he deserves her, and whether or not he really even loves her, or if it's just he loves the way he looks in her eyes. Like, you can sort of see how this is all this same inner conflict that I think goes back really effectively to the foundations laid in season one. So I think that scene that you started with is a great place to start as we're kind of talking about the culmination of those storylines, and really like the final like thrust of this season as it relates to Wilson Fisk.
Shifting gears here a little bit, once Matt decides to actually apologize to Karen and Foggy, I think that's actually a really nice moment on that rooftop where he comes clean and they kind of, you're talking about callbacks, kind of a callback to season one there. Get the band back together. Matt's going to finally do it the Nelson and Murdoch way. And that inspires Matt to go over to Nadim's house and beat up those bad guys and save Nadim. And a line that I don't know if they're trying to be funny with this or not, so I can't give them props, but actually makes me laugh out loud. After Daredevil beats up a bunch of bad guys at Nadim's house, Nadim pulls a gun on him and he goes, obviously, I'm here to help you. I think that's kind of funny. I don't know if they're trying to be funny, but obviously I'm here to help you.
To be funny.
But then Matt reveals himself to Nadim with the mask, which is a big moment too, I think. Because that's kind of Matt. What's kind of Matt acknowledging the Nelson and Murdoch side of it a little bit, that like, I'm going to let someone else in. I'm going to trust them with this other side of my life so that we can do it by the book, you know?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say this. Yeah. It's a big moment for Matt. It's also made for like a killer ending to that episode. This whole season has just had, they make it really hard for you to not press next episode on Disney Plus now. But I really like that too. And talking about the kind of Karen stuff from earlier, I remember you and I talking about how the whole like Three Amigos thing just never really clicked on the level that the show wanted it to, where it's like, at least a lot of the like, you know, it's us out there as a team, we're doing good, which just it didn't ring hollow per se. It was just maybe a little cheesy at times.
I agree.
But here, yeah, you're right. Both here and to kind of jump ahead, the very final scene where we kind of see them in a very similar spot to where we had the three at the end of season one, but feeling again, like it put a smile on my face. I thought it was like, wow, we got back to this place and it feels earned.
Yeah. That's why I said it was a nice moment. Put a smile on my face. Agreed.
Yeah. Same with the final moment with him and his mother, because I feel like it was, we're returning to the roots of season one, but everything is just like, Matt is back in this place of dealing with, like, he instead of kind of rejecting his faith, like now he's very much back in a position of embracing it, even with the contradictions there and the tension between that and his role as Daredevil, but even his understanding that, like, the line that basically God's plan was for him to become Daredevil. And so now coming full circle, not just at the beginning of season three, but beginning of season one, whenever he always felt like what he was doing as Daredevil was going against his faith, like now he actually sees that if he does it in the right way, it is in his mind, like what God always intended for him. And so it's like, that's all these moments in the final episodes, but particularly there in the finale, I think just it feels like such a great follow through from those seeds that were planted way back.
No doubt. We've covered this portion of the show so much here in our Daredevil coverage throughout this entire season, but I'm just struck at this point again at the beauty of the storyline they've been weaving from episode one of this season of the Matt versus Fisk thing and how... Mm-hmm. Where they take those characters, how they're kind of breaking Matt down, and how Fisk is beating Matt without ever actually confronting him in this season, essentially. And I feel like this is a turning point. Like, as this has been escalating, this episode is such a perfect turning point, because when Matt finally gets together with Foggy and Karen and he goes and saves Nadim, you start feeling like, oh, this is how they're going to do it. Like, this is how it's finally going to end it, right? That finally the law is going to win. And this is the beginning of that. So this is the first time you're starting to feel hopeful towards the end, and you've gone on this crazy journey with Matt. Now, what's cool about this show, getting into episode 12, is that they again break that down. Right when you think there is some hope and that the show's about to wrap, it doesn't again. And I think episode 12 is one of the best things they've made. Between Ray ultimately getting killed, and he gets killed because the law, which you think works, and by the way, you get one of the coolest action sequences where Matt is escorting.
That's
one of the coolest Envisions action sequences. It's during the day, on the bus, the way Matt can hear the guns reloading, like, shoot Ray. He goes, I can't fire without knowing they're there. Just shoot Ray. Like, just an exhilarating sequence to still get into the courthouse and immediately turn into Matt Murdock and have it all go perfectly well. And then Fisk has still gotten to him. Ray is still going to die. So it's like episode 11 kicks off this sign of hope. And then they immediately, after all this goes well, bring you right back down again at the end of 12. And that's why I think episode 12 is such an exhilarating ride. 12 and 13, man, holy cow.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I really liked the chance for Matt to talk frankly about his life with someone like Nadim.
Good point.
Like, I know that we've gotten that in different ways with Foggy and Karen and with, I guess, both the priest and Maggie, but that was just like a, like, when Nadim's like, man, I stepped off the path for, you know, a few months and look, like, I don't think I'm ever going to get my life back or my wife and kid. And then, like, he and Matt kind of talking about the, like, how do you do this? Like, you know, it looks like it's all working so well. And then
that's,
it's like,
a great
we
moment.
Know how, yeah, I mean, because Matt's life has been like in a blender since the first time we met him.
Yeah, it has not gone well, to say the least. one dumb plot thing that I understand why they made this call, right? So what happens is Fisk still gets to the jurors. They toss out the case from Nadim. And so Nadim goes, like, punches Foggy in the head, knocks him out, runs away, and decides, like, the only way to do this is to take it into his own hands. And it becomes a sick twist, actually. But he goes home and records this video, but he knows Dex is coming for him. Do you ever, this is not a movie making critique, okay? But just in a tangible world, do you ever wish Nadim, like, whenever this stuff happens for characters and he knows he's gonna die, I sometimes wish they would, like, home alone it a little bit more. like he knows Nadim's, like, he knows Dex is coming. It's instead of just standing outside by the pool, like, admitting he's gonna lose, like, could he not put up, like, a fake, you know, I don't know, a blow up body and then stand on the porch and shoot him in the head or something, you know, like go, I kind of want Nadim to go, like, totally rogue and go ham at the end. Like, he knows he's gonna lose, just, like, booby trap the house and go on a shooting spree. I don't know.
I know we needed some Hawkeye energy here.
Yes, a little bit.
One thing, though, that I did appreciate this time about that scene that I don't think I guess I caught it here in retrospect also, but in the finale, like, as we're looking back on this, he's making the video in episode 12. So we know that he's, like, but at the time, we don't really know what it is. I had this faint
recollection. Yeah, you think it's just a goodbye. Yeah.
Right. And I had this, like, memory of, oh, like, I think he, like, makes a video somehow that's like testimony, but the lawyer in me the whole time was like, yeah, but that wouldn't be admissible. And then as soon as they play it and you hear him say, like, this is my dying declaration, which is like one of the exceptions to hearsay that you learned about in law school, it's not only like, oh, wow, okay, well, like, that's another kind of fun, like, the same way that Charles Soule did a really good job in the She-Hulk show of, like, looping in all these, like, actual lawyer references. It was fun in that way here, but it was also fun because, well, not fun's not the right word here.
Yeah,
it was effective in that you realize that not only was he expecting to die, he was kind of relying on the fact that he was about to die, because if he didn't die, then that video would not be admissible. And that was probably his last time to get that out. Like, I think he knew that if he was ever in a position where Fisk could get to him, which he I think thought that he couldn't not be. Like he was there was no getting away from him. That if nothing else, they would do what they had initially thought about and keep him alive, but frame him, and that eventually he would be so discredited that the truth wouldn't matter. So I think it was like that was kind of his sacrifice play. And it made that final moment, because I kind of had the same thought, like that I wish he put up more of a fight. But then you realize, like, no, that's kind of the
well, and the for
tragic
a,
beauty of it.
For a split second, when I had never seen the show before, I thought it was going to be a suicide. I thought he was filming his video and then was going to kill himself. Because he had said that thing about, like, as long as I'm alive, my family is screwed.
And that's kind of what I remembered, weirdly. Like, I was kind of looking for it to go in that direction.
No.
And this is so much better.
Yeah, and there's a beauty in... I was joking about the Home Alone-ness, because there's a beauty in the location and stuff. Like, he goes outside and he says, because I want other people to hear it. Like, he wants the neighbors to hear that this happened. But I just think there's a beauty in... He's literally shot in that swimming pool that he was digging because he doesn't have any money. Like it's a perfect picture of how much his life had unraveled.
Right.
The whole financial stress of it and how Fisk had manipulated that with the hospital bills, et cetera. And then him not telling the truth to his wife and his family, trying to hide that from them, which was ultimately what got him in trouble. But like, part of that hiding was, oh, I'm still going to dig you a pool, even though he had no money. Like, he was so broke.
Yeah.
And he still goes the pool route so that his son doesn't think anything weird's happening. It's just like, it's a cruel irony to have that be the location, you know, of the final death.
Well, and something that I really appreciate about that, you know, like that final shot, like you're talking about, and also just Nadim's role in this whole thing. The show started off in season one again with this very like low to the ground feel, where it's not just that it's, you know, Daredevil taking on mob bosses. That's kind of street level in a different way. It's also street level in that, like, you see like Mrs. Gardenia getting killed as kind of just collateral damage of this whole thing. Like, there are several moments in season one where it's very clear that like there are casualties to this, and it's almost always just the normal everyday people that get caught up in it and are used and abused and discarded by people like Fisk.
Yep.
And so it's like kind of coming, you know, season two, I think it was at its best when you saw moments kind of like that, like the sort of human moments that we talked about loving so much with the Punisher. But it's certainly, that's what made the hand stuff so ineffective, I thought, is it takes away the kind of beating heart of the show to make it feel, you know, more Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I think that here it's just a reminder that even though ultimately Matt wins out over Fisk, it's like, man, the people that Fisk took down, just to your point earlier, with no hesitation and no remorse, it's like, it's all like you said, like, this was not he was not a corrupt guy. He was never trying to do anything wrong. He always thought he was doing the right thing, right up until he had been pulled into something, and then he still goes out doing the right thing and winds up being the crucial element to getting Fisk. But man, it's just such a heartbreaking thing, and I think it's a key part of this whole season, like the Nadim arc. It's like such a random, like, as far as I know, that character does not exist in the comics. If he does, I've never come across him. Just a totally invented thing that is like the emotional center of this season in a lot of ways, wildly.
Yep. Yeah. And such a strong part of it, like a great addition to the show.
My foster parents didn't just teach me to fish. They taught me that persistence and patience pay off. They didn't just teach me to bake the perfect birthday cake. They also taught me to measure and meet my own potential. They didn't just teach me to garden. They taught me to plant seeds and watch them grow. And they didn't just teach me to walk. They taught me to stand on my own 2 feet. Foster a child and change their future. Visit youthvillages.org/foster.
It's Jamie Foxx. At BetMGM, everyone gets a welcome offer. Get up to $1,500 in bonus bets when you sign up if your first bet doesn't go your way. You know I love a good welcome. Hey there, friends. I'm here to treat you right with BetMGM. A warm welcome to our new customers. I see you out there. I know you got what it takes, so take out that phone, tap that BetMGM app, and bet, baby. You know what it is. There's a bonus bet waiting for you. Oh, that's the good stuff. Get on in here. Get your welcome offer and play with the sports book born in Vegas, where they know how to treat you right. Download BetMGM and bet.
See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369, New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP, Arizona. 1-800-327-5050, Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF, Iowa. 1-800-981-0023, Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
The two other aspects of episode 12, we touched on this briefly a little bit ago, but Dex goes and kills the Jewish lady that had the painting and gives it to Vanessa. And it's such a dark thing to take that painting back on his own to show that there's right. blood in the corner. And my other note on that was, I had two notes. I wrote, is Fisk going to lose because of Vanessa? Like, for a while in this episode, they make you feel like maybe Fisk is getting soft. Basically, that's the way to say it. Mm-hmm. Like because he cares for Vanessa, like maybe that's going to be his downfall. And then I wrote, gosh, Vanessa is so weird. Because at the very end of the episode, you know, I think Vanessa's aware of the blood. That's the whole point of showing that. And she's like, oh, Dex killed this guy for me, this lady for me.
Yeah.
And then she kind of just like, okay, thank you. That's all you need. That's all I need right now. And it's like, dude, you are also a psychopath. And that's the first time we've kind of seen that where it's like, whoa, she's not just attracted to Fisk because he's covering up his life well. She's like into the stuff he's into. And really dark twist at the end of 12.
And it's also, I feel like it's kind of the first time that she is happy to be back. Which is
like she's going through emotions. She doesn't feel like it's her life. Like she has that conversation with Wilson. He's doing everything right for her, but she's just distant and checked out until there's a murder. And then she's kind of like, oh, okay, now I can be.
Yeah. But although she still needs some training because her recommendation that they kill Nadim is really what causes everything to unravel. So she still needs some mob boss, like on the job internship or something.
So then getting into the finale then, that's a fascinating part of this too, because between episode 12 and 13, when Fisk finally takes Vanessa down into his dungeon of sorts and lets her sit at the control room, what's your read on that situation? Because like the first two times I watched it, there's almost like a... I almost feel like Fisk is a little bit bummed about it at first. Like it's almost like at first he's a little bit turned off that she wants to be involved and that like this mm-hmm. wasn't enough for her. And then I think it's a little bit, maybe I'm reading way too much into it. I think it's a little bit weird for him to give up some power to her for a second.
Yeah.
But then he puts his arm on her and it's kind of like, okay, we could do it this way. But I don't know. Do you read that scene a little bit differently? I feel like it's a little bit weird for him.
I know. I think you're right, because Fisk is someone that has never had to take orders whenever it comes to his business. He's always giving orders, but he's also made himself very much the servant of Vanessa. And we've seen that he'll do anything for Vanessa. He'll give up anything for Vanessa. And so by bringing her into the fold in this way, he's kind of subordinating himself.
Yeah, right.
No,
I'm not sure
how
he
feels
about it at first.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I don't think that I thought about it that way. But yeah, I think that that is kind of what's going on there. And again, I also think I think his first instinct was correct not to do that, because not only did her giving that, like kind of changing the recommendation, have consequences, I do think that he can't, like the thing that makes Fisk so effective is his ability to make these cold, calculating decisions that are four or five steps ahead of everybody else.
Without factoring in anyone else in the decision.
Exactly.
It's the very thing he talks about, how he's in prison now, right? Like the very thing that brings him life and joy, Vanessa, is the only thing that gives his life meaning, is the thing that is ultimately costing him.
Yeah.
Because like at the very, very end, especially, like he basically gives up, he gives in of sorts because Vanessa might be in danger.
Yeah.
That's the only thing keeping him from going after Foggy and Karen and stuff, you know? That's what he says.
Yeah. You know, even that scene that you mentioned in the last episode where he's talking with the woman that owns the painting now, whenever he's characterizing he and Vanessa's relationship in season one, he talks about how she gave him like new purpose and direction. But again, like if you remember back in season one, that's when everything went off the rails because he couldn't hold both of those pieces of his life together. And so all of the people from like Wesley to the other bosses were like, hey, you're losing control. Like she's bad for you. And it's like everything that he's done in season three that's worked out so well, he was doing like to get back to Vanessa. But it's like as soon as she's actually back and he has her there, much less like once he has her in the inner circle. It's like I think he really surrenders so much of that control. Like that's not what gives him, I mean, it is what gives him direction, I guess, and purpose in a certain sense, but not in a way that is sustainable if he wants to be the kingpin of crime. Also, one quick Easter egg that I don't think I had picked up on whenever I first saw this. It's fresh on my mind because of the gang war event going on in the Marvel Comics at the moment. But the Rose in the comics is a mob boss that is revealed. It's sort of like one of these kind of ongoing mystery guys, and we don't know who he is. And ultimately, he's revealed as Richard Fisk, the son of Wilson and Vanessa.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, in the comics, by the time we meet Wilson and Vanessa, they already have a... You know, it's like they've been married for a long time. And so Richard is basically like I think we're supposed to see him as the same age as Spider-Man in those comics. So somewhere like when he's introduced in his 20s. But so I don't know how they would do that here, although maybe there's some blip stuff. But I just did notice whenever she's like picking out the flower that he's going to wear on his lapel for the wedding.
Yeah.
She says the rose, I think. And then like, puts that like there was a specific like it wasn't like oh I think a rose would look nice. It's the line is the rose, I think, and then the fact that they then get married and she is now actually Vanessa Fisk, I thought was like if not a setup, kind of a nice little like wink to the people that know to look for it. So that was fun.
There you go. Okay, so as I'm kind of wrapping up this entire episode, there are some conversations I want to make sure to be on the record that we need to have. I don't think we're going to have it today, but I do want to talk maybe during Echo or maybe a separate episode on the main feed. I do want to talk about where this show leaves everything. And if it's now canon, what do we think happened? And do we think we'll ever get explanation in the MCU? You know, because like, for example, Fisk is obviously not in prison when we see him in the MCU. And we now know Daredevil is still doing his thing with the same outfit and whatnot. So I'm just kind of curious how we think they got there. And we'll talk about that in a different episode, maybe during Echo, for real. I think that'd be fascinating to talk about. The other thing I want to say from a really high level is, and I know our listeners, if you've listened to the other 8 episodes we have of this series, I just want to emphasize one last time how elite this is. Like how much I love this entire series, but especially this season. And I think sometimes when I go episode by episode and I've talked about it so much already, I don't want people to lose my excitement. Like if I'm just going through notes, it's not because I'm not excited. I think it's so freaking good. And again, this is coming from somebody who has never read a Daredevil comic and never, like I resisted the show forever. Like I didn't want it to be canon. And so if you are on the fence and you're somehow listening to this episode, I really think you should watch it. It's really good. And now that it's joined the MCU, like let this show do some of the informing for you in the MCU. Like there's going to be some stuff that you'll benefit knowing. And a tiny tidbit on that, as we saw in the Echo trailer, as Fisk is about to get married, as Fisk is about to get married, we see that flashback of him looking in the mirror and seeing himself as a 12-year-old holding the hammer after just murdering his father. And that's now in the MCU. That sequence.
Yeah.
So directly pulled from that, the wedding in general. Sorry. I wanted to say that as a high level thing before I wrap this up.
Yeah.
Because it's so freaking good. I can't go over all the things that are good. Like you said, the grit, the camera work, the directing, the performances, the writing to get to this point in the finale, the music, like everything is just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Top notch. Everything. I thought the wedding in and of itself was a crazy, fascinating call. Like if you had asked me on my bingo card in season one, how is this entire thing going to wrap up? I never would have had Fisk getting married. That's a crazy thing in and of itself. And the whole plot line of Matt tried Foggy's way and it still didn't work. Yeah. Like I said, like you still are hopeless. And so now he's finally going to just freaking murder him. And the mixed emotions I have with that, because I'm sometimes like, yeah, you probably do just need to kill him. Like someone needs to kill him if it's not Matt. Like if you just killed him, so much of this would go away. But at the same time, I understand Matt's moral compass. So just like the complexity and the emotions I feel there, so freaking good. I don't know. Lots to add here.
I the scene reminded me in a very unintentional way because these movies, these came out like the same year, but it reminded me of Into the Spider-Verse when they show up and he's having like the big event and then they're getting down to the super collider. Not relevant at all, but I just had to say it out loud because it's in my head. The moment when, like, first you realize that Matt is back to operating from a place of some control. Like, as mad as he is at Foggy, and as much as you're like, oh, is he gonna like undo everything that he's kind of done in the last couple episodes as we've seen him come back to the fold. But like, you're seeing him operate so with such a clear head, like the way he is able to use, I mean, you could say he's manipulating Dex, but really he's just telling Dex the truth and letting Dex realize that Fisk has used him and has manipulated him. Like, so I love, even before we get to that final battle, what you know Matt is doing, because Matt is kind of doing to Fisk the kind of thing that Fisk has done to everybody else. Like, before he even shows up and actually uses his fists, Matt is moving pieces on the board to mess with Wilson and to ruin. I mean, he says to Dex, like, I don't think he deserves a happily ever after, so let's go crash his wedding. And all of that I loved. But then, yeah, you're right. Like the execution of that what we kind of learn about Fisk, that moment that I think carries through the entire finale of him looking into Vanessa's eyes, where it's like, man, this guy is so evil and so terrifying in a way that few other villains in the MCU have ever been. But somehow, because of D'Onofrio's performance, you can still in certain moments really like feel bad for him and want him to just be with Vanessa, because it's like,
yeah, when Dex finds out that his girlfriend's been murdered by Fisk, it's just, I mean, does it get darker than that? I don't know that it gets darker than that.
Well, he puts her corpse in the passenger seat next to him and then drives to the wedding.
The way Dex then totally snaps afterwards is dark for sure. I just mean from a villain perspective that Fisk would literally take out Dex's only shot of being a human, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just, that's so debilitating. But yeah, then it gets like the weirdest type thing when he pulls up with the corpse.
Oh, man.
But his role in this is also perfectly written. That battle ends with him also kind of trying to kill Fisk because he's jaded about it now, but he also is pissed at Matt. Like, he's not on Matt's team. It's fascinating, man. Wow.
Well, it's like the, yeah, there's so many nuanced things happening through this whole season that are just so impressive the longer you look at it, because he is another, like, he is ultimately a victim of Fisk. Like, he is a person that is a sociopath or a psychopath, I guess, that has known that about himself and has legitimately tried to be better. Like, it's like you can't hold his biology against him. And like, he has tried to put tools in place, and it's Fisk that, like, again, he's still responsible for his own choices and knew what he was doing, but Fisk definitely, I mean, he read or listened to all these interviews that he had with his therapist and then just totally destroyed this person down to murdering the only person that he was kind of looking to for inspiration and hope. And it's like, man. So in the same breath, whenever I'm talking about feeling bad for Fisk, that's what's so crazy about it, is it's like he is tearing apart like anyone and everyone. And so I love that Bullseye kind of turns around on him here at the end, because it's like it feels like both a comeuppance, I guess, and also I think it's kind of a moment where Dex gets to become a villain in his own right and not someone that's just a stooge of Fisk's. Now, whether we see any follow-up to that, that was going to be one of my questions for you as we're looking at kind of where this left things. And I do want to talk a little bit more in a second about Fisk and Matt in this final scene. But with Dex, you know, I said this last episode, I think, I'm a huge fan of his performance here. I really like this version of Bullseye. It makes a lot of sense to me. It feels grounded. He's scary and it's kind of unique in the way that the performance is delivered. Clearly the show intended, you know, they didn't know that they were getting canceled when they filmed the season. So clearly, like, there's supposed to be a stinger to bring Bullseye back. My question to you is, I guess, twofold. One, do you think that they will? And two, do you think that they should?
Okay. I think no and no.
Oh, wow.
So I agree with everything you just said, but does that mean I need more of him? Like, that's my thing always. It's the Toy Story 3 thing. Like, I feel like they wrote his story and finished it so perfectly, and like having him be paralyzed or something is a perfect ending. I don't then need a stinger that he's actually surgically repairable to come back as another villain. Like it's perfect and it's been played out for me. I just don't need another version of him. Like, I don't need,
see,
and I don't think they're going to do it. The second thing though, I would say is, you know, leaving that as a stinger for the showmakers, let's say there was a world where that show doesn't get canceled. Like, I think it's almost a blessing in disguise that now it's brought into the MCU, just because I don't know where else, and I don't know the comics, but I don't know where else emotionally I would even want it to go. Like the three seasons, like the ending here is so perfect to me that I would hate being tasked with being the writer of season four. Cause I'm just thinking like, I wouldn't in the non MCU world, I mean, want to like get Fisk out of jail right away and retell a Fisk versus Matt story, the exact same, that you can't top it. So why bring that back? And I just don't like Dex was ended so perfectly. I don't need more of him. So I just kind of think to myself, like, it might be a blessing in disguise that the show ended where it did. Like, they got to tell the three seasons as perfectly as possible, and then they can join the MCU where different things are now possible, right? Where now we can build towards Daredevil and Spider-Man or something different, I'm saying, entirely.
No, I agree and disagree. I think you're right. It was probably a blessing in disguise because it would have been weird. Like, this came out in 2018. Infinity War came out, and then we had Endgame the next year, and then the long COVID break. It would have been
always
a really
forget how late this came out. Like, I always think of this being in like 2008 or 10.
Dude,
or
no, this is why I said I think on our Discord not long ago is the year to beat still in terms
of
Marvel.
Just even in the MCU context, like not 2008, but I always thought the show was happening like 2011, when superhero stuff was kind of just getting rolling. I forget that this was canceled like during Infinity Wars run. That's not that long
ago. But that's kind of why, like, and I think that that's why they did it. I think that if you go back, it was like something was queuing up where basically there was no reason for Netflix to carry forward with this series or for Disney to let them, because I think at that point they already knew Disney Plus was coming, even though they hadn't announced it yet. But I do think you're right in that it was a good, like, it needed a break regardless, because I think it left us in this spot of like, what happened? Like, if this is in the MCU, which, like we've said before, it started out acting as though it was happening post Battle of New York. Then did they get blipped? Like, are they still alive? What's, is Fisk in prison? So I think it did create a nice, like, lingering question mark to where, I think if season four had dropped in like 2019, it would have been kind of this like lame duck thing where it was like, what is this? Like, which, by the way, is kind of how I felt. I think that is the year that maybe the last season of Jessica Jones dropped, or at least like it was either that or Iron Fist, but something was coming out after it was very clear that like Daredevil had already been canceled for the next season. But I think they were just releasing what they still had in the pocket. And it was like, man, like this feels meaningless to me. And yeah, I think if Daredevil had ended on that note, it would have been a big bummer. Instead, it ends on such a high note. And then now it feels like we're just picking up with a totally new chapter or book. So I agree with you there. I guess I still like Daredevil has two main villains, really, outside of the like Elektra hand stuff. More generally, it is Kingpin and Bullseye. And I think that Bullseye, like this final battle with them, it's a good change of pace for Matt, because we're so used to like his big bad being Fisk, who is like, Matt is normally like the kind of acrobatic guy, like dancing around the just like sheer raw power of Fisk. And that's kind of inverted with him and Bullseye. Like, it's a difference. It's like Matt is the one that's trying to get close, because he's actually like, if he can just make contact with Dex, like he can take him out. Like, Dex doesn't have anything on him when it comes to like fighting, but it's this like terrifying thing where if he's anywhere in the open ever, he's at risk, because Bullseye has the like kind of Hawkeye thing going where he can kill you at any point with anything. So I think it's a good dynamic, and it's a good villain for Daredevil, even just visually. And I feel like I don't know that this left, like I thought it was a perfect arc for Dex, but I don't feel like it would be something that would be messed up by continuing. I almost feel like it's like in the same way that we look at the original, like the John Watts Spider-Man movies as kind of just a 3-movie long origin story for Spider-Man. I kind of look at this season as a season long origin story for Bullseye that would kind of make sense where if he shows back up as just a straight villain in costume or not or whatever, we understand why he's doing what he's doing. And I think on the flip side, if you're someone that didn't watch the Daredevil show, but you do watch Daredevil Born Again or, you know, whatever projects follow and he showed up, I don't think that you would have to necessarily rehash all that because there's some, it's like you don't need a ton of context to understand a villain's motivation if he's just like a psychopath anyway. But I think that for people that watch this play out, I think it would be satisfying. And
speaking of psychopaths, your dog is a psychopath.
I know. we'll see how much that makes it into the episode.
I'm not going to die on this hill. So this is as long as I need to argue it. Sure. But I would just say, like, I think you make a really compelling point. I just personally don't think I need it. Like, you haven't swayed me fully. If he is there, I'm not going to be against it, you know, for sure. But I'd be fine to kind of shift into a different, more MCU realm. That's all. Than a guy running around throwing things at people.
Well, but I think
I'm not against it.
I think that's where we could, though, you know, is it's like we already know that Daredevil's back in like his costume, which like is a very MCU kind of a thing as opposed to the Netflix Marvel. And I think that there's a world where like if we are, I guess I'm just saying if we're going to have Daredevil stick around in the MCU for the long term, I think that it would be a bummer to not utilize one of his two most famous villains and actually like do the kind of Mysterio thing and get him in the costume. And my final point that is kind of like my motivating all this is I just feel like the actor there and his name escapes me, is doing, I just think a really good job. And I would hate to like, anytime I see someone like that, where I connect to their performance and it's a villain, like whenever you and I talk so much about how like Marvel had a tendency to kill villains, and then you're like, oh man, well that kind of would have been nice if that character could have hung around. I'm like, hey, you know, if we have a well-developed villain and it's an actor that has a sense of the character and is delivering on that, and he's still alive intentionally, then like, I think we should follow that somewhere. I hear you.
We talked about the visual symmetry of Nadim dying in the pool. I think that is only topped by the painting being involved in this final fight. Just that the entire time the fight's going down, you're kind of worried that the painting's going to get messed up. And the shot of Matt beating the absolute crap out of Fisk, who has basically surrendered. And Matt is just punching blood out of his face, and blood is splattering on the white painting, the all white painting, and the visual of that. And I get as big of chills in this sequence as I do with almost anything in the MCU when Matt yells, "You don't get to tell me who I am." Like when he finally snaps and then realizes I can't kill this guy and makes the right call at the end. But how aggressively he yells that gives me so many chills. The symmetry of that shot and Vanessa on the stairs and Poindexter's back broken. Like, I don't know. It's just that very last shot. And then Matt getting all of his redemption at the end. He gets his spiritual redemption, his healing with Foggy Karen and Foggy's family and all of that. You know how I feel about the little joke about starting a Nelson Murdoch again. It's like, okay, I don't know if I need that anymore, but I am thankful they're all back on the same page. It brought a smile to my face, and just the healing Matt has in that moment in not killing Fisk is such a beautiful spiritual thing for him. Even with his mother and Lantum and all the stuff that had gone wrong. So I don't have a ton to add here, just that it's such a special moment for me the last 10 minutes or so.
Well, and I actually feel like it makes, like, again, having not seen this in a while, I feel like I forgot exactly where we left Matt before we pick up with him again in No Way Home and more in She-Hulk. And it also makes that transition, like, especially the She-Hulk one, which, you know, like, however much people thought he was too goofy or whatever, like, Matt is back in a light place at the end of this. Like, he's laughing with Karen and Foggy and making jokes.
Excellent point.
Excellent point. So, yeah, I think that's it.
And let's just let people see Echo. You know, let's let people see Echo. Uh-huh. And then we'll go from there.
Well, and I know I'm like wanting to talk about that now. But the last thing I would say, I think, that kind of relates to that in terms of where we left Matt. I really liked that between episode, I guess, 12 and 13, we saw for the first time, like, Matt Murdock come back. Like, we talked about him operating, like, with a clear head.
Yep.
As Daredevil there at the end, but it's like the moment when he's negotiating the deal with Tower for Nadim, like, we're seeing Matt be the like zealous advocate lawyer again. But then I think especially, I just thought the decision to have him deliver the eulogy for Father Bantam,
Lantham.
Who's Bantam? What am I thinking of there? Anyway.
Not Bantam.
No, but I thought it was with a B. Lantham. Okay.
Oh, Bantam. Yeah. L.
Okay. Lantham. Is that right?
Or Tum. I kind of want to keep this all in. Lantham, right? Lantham?
Now I'm going to...
Lantham. I'll Google it. Keep
Lantham.
Talking.
I'll
Google
Lantham. Lantham. Okay. I just looked it
That's
up.
That's what I said. Okay. I was right from the beginning.
Yeah. Paul okay. Lantham. Okay.
Paul Lantham. Yeah.
The decision
L-A-N-T-O-M. Sorry, keep going.
The decision to have Matt deliver the eulogy at Father Lantham's funeral, I thought was not a crucial one, but kind of the cherry on top for me, because we see I think it reminded me again of the first time we were introduced to Matt as a lawyer in season one, when he's delivering, I think it was the opening statement for one of their criminal trials before he meets Fisk. And it's just like they're letting you know, like, this guy's a really talented orator. He's like a very, like, he understands how to communicate in that way, and he's gifted in that way. And so it's kind of for a whole season, when he's been basically saying Matt Murdock is dead and I'm only Daredevil and I only care about this war on Fisk, to see it come back to not only him reestablishing Nelson and Murdock kind of, but also just kind of seeing that in action a little bit, like him back to this, like, the Matt Murdock that we initially met and the one that we understand to be this super successful, gifted attorney. I just thought was a, like, I don't know that I would have thought of using that scene in that way, but I thought it was a really great, like, hey, here's a Matt Murdock again moment.
Totally agree. What a show. I got to run here in a second, but this has been so much fun. Covering this series has brought me so much joy. I hope our Friends from Work Plus listeners have enjoyed this journey. And as I said, there's going to be a lot more Daredevil coming up, not just this year, but next year as well, with Daredevil Born Again joining the MCU, with Echo, with the She-Hulk appearances. I want to do some other discussions on the Made feed about where we think, like, how this could tie in, as I mentioned. But this has been such a joy. On Friends from Work Plus, I'm throwing all of these episodes in a collection on Patreon, which is really helpful. So if you want to just go through all of our Daredevil stuff, it's easily laid out for you now. Any last words before we talk MCU Daredevil, Robbie? Anything you want to say about Netflix before we wrap this and I say goodbye?
You know, I will say I was surprised. I shouldn't be, because, like I said, they were still going, I guess, at the time. But if I remember correctly, there is only one reference in this entire season to any of the other Netflix shows outside of just the fact that he did have a building
at the
fall
very, 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 very end, right? The Jessica Jones comment?
Yeah. The Jessica Jones, like, to the point where I was like, oh, wow, okay, because I had almost forgotten that we were in that universe because this show is so intent, rightly, on focusing just on these characters.
It totally doesn't matter either way, but don't you almost a tiny bit wish they hadn't included that? Just because now in hindsight, it'd been easy to been like,
right,
yeah, season three happened entirely in the MCU and Jessica Jones didn't, you know? But he says that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the, you know, talking about getting into the Jessica or the MCU of it all, that's going to be the interesting thing, I think, because I believe that Kristen Ritter is confirmed or as good as confirmed to also show up in some capacity in the MCU, like as Jessica Jones, but I don't know in what project.
Well,
or if it's a cameo or what, but it, you know, and then it's going to turn into the,
we'll have that conversation,
the
then.
Slippery slope, but yeah. But no, I think like my final thoughts on this universe is I think it gave us some really great Daredevil episodes, some that are as good as anything that the MCU has done. I think aside from that, it mostly failed. And you have only seen really the Defenders. But Jessica Jones season one is excellent. I don't think anyone really watched season two. So if they are going to bring Kristen Ritter in, I would love her to come in the same way she was in that first season. I would even love if they retconned the villain death from that season and brought that villain in, which we'll, you know, talk about. I don't want to go too into that now in case we get into that world. But outside of that and outside of some really great moments early on in Luke Cage before they made the inexplicable decision to kill off Mahershala Ali like three episodes in,
spoiler
alert. I just think the whole thing was kind of I feel like it is my duty to tell people that because they marketed that show hard as like a Mahershala Ali thing. But anyway, my point being, I think that people, as often happens, tend to put rose-colored glasses on when they look back on the Marvel Netflix stuff because they're remembering just the highs of those series.
I am impressed that you can do any of this talking with the barking in the background. It's so impressive. We'll talk more about that. I don't want to start expanding the discussion to the whole Netflix thing.
We'll
get into it.
No, all I'm saying is I feel, because I was just talking to Candace about that earlier in relation to Echo, because she was asking, oh, you know, isn't this supposed to be super violent? And I was kind of talking about the like preliminary backlash from the Netflix Marvel fans whenever all of this was kind of announced and saying that, you know, it would never be violent enough and all of that stuff. And I just think it's a good moment as we're transitioning away to both like express gratitude for what the Netflix universe did do well and what it gave us, and also recognize that it is not
good point.
Really something worth putting on a pedestal.
Yeah. Fair point. So much coming. We love all of you guys. Hope you enjoyed this. And we'll be back here soon on Friends from Work Plus. We'll see you.
My foster parents didn't just teach me to fish. They taught me that persistence and patience pay off. They didn't just teach me to bake the perfect birthday cake. They also taught me to measure and meet my own potential. They didn't just teach me to garden. They taught me to plant seeds and watch them grow. And they didn't just teach me to walk. They taught me to stand on my own two feet. Foster a child and change their future. Visit youthvillages.org/foster.